to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX. I'm your host, Stel, and this edition is brought to you by My Sportswear, Youth Energy and Save Association. Now, the word legend has lost its meaning somewhat, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Dave downed the pint in less than 10 seconds, and his mates say he's a legend. Nick wrangled the free Nando's after complaining about his cutlery not being clean enough. Clearly a legend. Now, my guest epitomises the word legend. A highly experienced and respected individual in British TV and media, an author of 9 books about football, who ghostwrote the fastest-selling UK sports autobiography of all time, My Side by David Beckham. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Tom Watt to Shoot the Defence. Tom, welcome to the show, mate. Oh, great to have you on. It's absolutely amazing to have you.
More legend than legend, to be honest, mate.
Come on now. You've done really, really well. It's very impressive. Very impressive. How are you doing this evening, mate? Thanks for taking
really
the time.
Really good, yeah.
Great stuff.
It's been a good day.
Good. That's what I like to hear. Positivity.
No, they're all good at the moment. There's kind of good projects going on, and just been working on. I've got a new book underway at the moment that I'm working on with someone, and we had a very good morning on that this morning, and then this afternoon trying to get some funding for a new picture playing at a local school. So no, it's good.
Excellent. It's good. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. Brilliant. Well, Tom, you've appeared on numerous TV shows and films, one of them being Patriot Games starring Harrison Ford. Now, was acting something you wanted to do from a young age, mate?
Yeah, it was, really. Yeah, that was what I always kind of imagined I would do, and and was lucky to do it for a long time, really. I mean, you know, I kind of did a degree in drama and started my own theatre company, and then kind of started getting work in TV, and I was in EastEnders for the first 3 years it was on, and then kind of carried on from there, really, but sort of just increasingly sort of football, which was my other great passion, but wasn't, you know, once I'd realised at about age 8 that I was, you know, I had kind of 2 horrible left feet, then, you know, I never really thought about the idea of, you know, it would never occur to you, would it, if you didn't play football, it never occur to you that you could work in that field. I certainly couldn't when I was a kid, so I just sort of went other ways, but, you know, with playing and meeting people and talking to people, and then my first book really sort of, which was about football, that kind of kicked things off, really, and I guess one way or another I've been doing a lot to do with football ever since.
Absolutely. Now, the thing is, when you look at the industry at the moment, would you say it's easier or more difficult now for an aspiring actor to make a name for themselves in the industry?
Oh, blimey. I think, that's a good question, you know. Because I think if you get... No, look, so much of it is to do with luck anyway. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that, say you're an actor who really, you know, you're a young actor who wants to kind of make a way and has decided that's what you want to do for a living. In fact, that's the only thing you want to do for a living. I think in many ways it's more difficult now, you know, because there was a whole kind of, it was almost like there was a sort of, you know, it was almost kind of like a pathway then,
right.
You know, kind of repertory theatre and stuff like that. Not that I ever did much of that, but I'm guessing that there were kind of steps you could take when you were learning the trade, whereas now, it just seems like there's so many more people wanting to do it. There's so few kind of opportunities to sort of learn as you go. Do you know what I mean? And certainly the opportunity to learn as you go and make a living doing it, I think is really, it's difficult now. Obviously, for some people, you know, people kind of get lucky, don't they?
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, to be able to sort of, to kind of have a plan or a pathway, and also to kind of sustain a career, I think is difficult now too. So, yeah, I would say it's probably harder now than ever. You know, and it's similar maybe, I suppose, to know, you look now, even with kind of working in football, there's so many more jobs in football now, but there's so many more people want to do it.
Right, right.
You know, so I don't know, it's hard to compare, because obviously I'm not in that situation now, so I don't know firsthand what it'd be like now.
I mean, I've had these similar discussions with my dad. It's difficult to gauge how easy or how difficult it is. I mean, you take the music industry for example. He says to me, "Oh, back in the day when the Beatles were around, they were massive, but they didn't have your YouTubes. They didn't have all these different ways of getting their music out. It was just mostly word of mouth and radio, and they made it big because of that. But these days, when you flip it, you've got your YouTubes, you've got your different, but you've got piracy, you've got all these other ways of
absolutely, you know, and also. Yes, you've got all those media, but of course, all those media out there, it means there's just a kind of forest of stuff. You know, how do you find your way through that? How do you, make your way through that? And because it's not just you that's got access to all that, it's everybody who's out there, do you know what I mean? And
that's
everybody
right.
who's kind of dreaming about. So, yes, you can maybe, anybody can kind of record a track and upload it to YouTube and, do what you do, whereas I guess back in the day you would have to, get a gig in a pub somewhere and hopefully get an A&R guy down to look, and maybe you get signed, and then of course you make a record and that's when you might make some money.
That's right.
Of course now, making money from selling records or CDs or anything isn't what music's about anymore. I mean, the money is made on tour.
That's right.
It used to be that tours supported recorded music, and now it's the other way around. So it's things have changed, but I don't know. You know, the only thing you can tell for sure is that things have changed. Better or worse, who knows? It's just what it is, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And speaking of change, you played the role of Lofty Holloway in EastEnders back in 85. Now, that was one of the first characters in the soap. Did you think...
Yeah, first 3 years. I was in that for... First 3 years, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Did you think EastEnders would be on TV that long? I mean, it's 32 years. This is a long time.
Yeah, it is a long time. But although, to be fair, long-running series like that, whether it's Coronation Street or, Crossroads back in the day, or, Hollyoaks or Brookside or all of them that have come and gone, they do, they're designed to last. And it's if you get it right, and obviously, back in the day they did get it right with EastEnders, just like they got it right with Coronation Street, and you're not thinking, oh, it's going to be going on in 32 years, because I ain't really bothered about that. All I'm bothered about is how long I'm going to be in it. And that was 3 years, so that was great, and that was done, sort of thing.
I'm sure you've been asked this many a time, but, Michelle Fowler's returned. Is there any chance Lofty will make a comeback?
Well, I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
So, I mean, he didn't die.
Yeah, there you are.
He didn't die.
There you go. The door's always open there.
But, I tell you what, I think they work harder than we used to work.
Yeah.
Now, because they do all these shows, don't they? It's like, what do they do, four shows a week now?
I think so, yeah.
We're doing two shows a week. And it gets hard, and it gets hard to keep kind of getting it out there. I mean, it's a little bit like football, isn't it? With kind of live football now, it's just everywhere all the time. Well, I still remember when, it makes me sound old, I am old, but, it makes me sound older.
Now.
You remember the day when it was like FA Cup final and the big match on Sunday, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And now it's everywhere. And I guess kind of soap operas are a little bit like that as well. So, I don't know.
Fair enough. Well, you've been involved in football in many different capacities, such as working for Barnet and Arsenal's community projects, writing, presenting documentaries for BT Sport, and even creating content for FC Kabale in Azerbaijan. Now, of all the projects you've worked on, mate, which ones did you enjoy most?
That's a good question. There's things... I mean, there's stuff I'm doing right now that I'm enjoying, like, you know, I'm a story consultant for EA Sports for the FIFA games.
Oh, journeyman.
Yeah, for the journey, and, you know, I help with the stories on that, and, you know, I love that, and yeah. That's, you know, that's a job that didn't even exist 5 years ago. So, but I would say there are a couple of three things that do stand out. There was one... there was one book project I did called A Beautiful Game, which was published here in, I think it was published here in about 2009 and published worldwide. It came out all over the world, published in 2010. And that book was about football and childhood around the world. And basically what I did was I kind of found my way to 40 of the world's greatest players, 40 players from 40 different countries. And I just went and talked to them about, it was like my story finished when everybody else's stories about these guys began. So I'm going to meet people like Lionel Messi, Fabio Cannavaro, Iker Casillas, Nanko Kanu, Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, people from all over, you know, all over. And all I was talking to them about was their childhood. So I would go and we would sit down and talk about what was the best years of their lives. Obviously, it's the best years of all our lives, isn't it? When you're just out in the street kicking ball. And I just talked to them about the communities they grew up in, whether that was a city or a village or, you know, out in the middle of nowhere, about their families, about, you know, their friends, their schools, where they first played football, what football meant in the, you know, in their communities, and what football meant in the culture of the country they came from. And that book really was sort of, you know, you hope all your life that you might do something that's original. And that book was, and remains, kind of completely unique. Do you know what I mean? It was a genuinely original thing. And it kind of had a life afterwards. Do you know what I mean? It was, I was then able to kind of produce off the back of that basic idea. Because these were great stories. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They're great people and they're, you know, being great players, they still had that kind of love of the game going on. And you just, you know, they're all ending up in kind of big leagues in Europe, but then you take them back to where they came from, and just amazing stories, really, of yeah. kind of growing up. And that, you can tell, really, that sort of subject matter, that has kind of had a life afterwards, you know what I mean? So I was able to produce quite a lot of educational resources that Arsenal's community department used, that did program articles in the program for Arsenal with, you know, the same kind of stories, but just all the Arsenal first team squad and a few legends and kind of members of staff and stuff. So it was just a, you know, it's the kind of thing you kind of, you look at, and I'm still, you know, I'm still proud of that. I'm still proud of that. Obviously books are, because it's just you doing it, obviously there is a satisfaction that comes with that. You know, my very first book, The End, about the North Bank of Highbury, you know, that still, you know, just works as a, I quite like to be able to create sort of, you know, documents so people, you know, kids growing up now, they don't know what it's like to grow up watching football standing on the North Bank or standing on the Stretford End or, you know, the Shed or the Kop. And it was a completely different world, a different way of experiencing football. And, you know, that first book, I recognised that was going to happen when we went to All-Seater Stadium and football began to change. And so I kind of wanted to capture that, really, because you're talking, you know, 80, 90, 100 years of families and bunches, you know, groups of friends and stuff like that standing together watching, where actually going to the football and being with your mates and all of that was kind of the thing, really, rather than necessarily what was going on the pitch. So I just want to capture that, and that's still there. So that book is there, and so if people want to know what it was like, there's the people who, you know, I spoke to people then, because this is 20-odd years ago, I was able to speak to people who had been at the first ever game at Highbury in 1913.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean? So that is a story there, and obviously then, you know, the North Bank came down in 92 to be replaced by an all-seater stand. So basically you've got a whole story. end. And to be able to tell that story was great. And I did a similar book for the local, but the idea of kind of leaving behind a document, do you know what I mean? That document is there, and that's there for good. So people, if they want to know what it is like to watch football from a terrace, from a home end, that book's still there. And then I did a book for the local organising committee at the 2010 World Cup, because I'd been to South Africa a year previously and just thought, this is going to be the greatest, you know, this the most important World Cup of all time, which it was, even though it wasn't the best in terms of football, just the impact on the country and on the people and, you know, what it meant for Africa to have its first World Cup. It was just massive. It was huge. And so, so I worked with the local organising committee in South Africa and spent 5 or 6 months just travelling around South Africa, just talking to people, you know, during the tournament and after it, just talking to people about their experience of the World Cup. And the book was actually called 2010, when the World Cup came to South Africa. And it's entirely a book for South Africa. You can't buy it outside South Africa. But so that the country had this document. You know, so kids growing up in 10, 20, 30 years' time, they go, wow, like South Africa, we put on a World Cup. What was that like? Well, they can go to that book. And, you know, and when I say what was that like, I don't mean what was the final like or what were England like. Or I mean, what was it like to be in the country? Yeah. What did it mean to the country then? So, you know, books like that I'm proud of, really. I'm proud of.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you should be. I mean, you know, you mentioned the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, and you look at USA in 94, and back then, let's be fair, the Americans weren't enthusiastic about it. Yeah, there was that element of, oh yeah, we've got a World Cup, but that's about it. But now MLS is growing, USL is growing, obviously the Premier League is massive out there. They yearn for a World Cup out there, and they're probably thinking, wow, all that time ago when we had that, we didn't really care too much about it. But now
Without wanting to kind of contradict, I'm not sure that's 100% true. I mean, that World Cup broke all attendance records. You know, it was the best attended World Cup up to that stage of all time. And although you're right that kind of, you know, there wasn't a league up and functioning, that they had to wait a year for that. Even so, there is a... The thing you've got to bear in mind with America is that football has been the number one participation sport for young people in the United States, not just in the last few years, not just since the 94 World Cup. It has been the biggest participation sport for kids, for young people in the United States, since the 60s. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to go back and you think about the NASL, the, you know, with the New York Cosmos and a lot of clubs actually who've now come back and are part of MLS or franchises, not clubs, but franchises, you know, like the Seattle Sounders and the Vancouver Whitecaps, who were clubs back in the 70s with the NASL.
Yep.
So there is more. The thing has been to turn a participation sport into a, you know, sport that kids dream of playing for a living and, you know, a functioning professional league. And, you know, I've done a bit of work with one or two clubs in MLS, and you know, I think it's really interesting what they're trying to do. You know, they are really trying to kind of give the game a proper, you know, give the game proper roots and a proper base in the States, and they'll succeed. You know, they're doing, you know, it's already the, what, fifth, sixth biggest attended league in the world, and, you know, they're struggling with television, but as a live game, and I just think, generally speaking, they're kind of headed in the right direction, really.
Yeah, I think because they've got a philosophy, and they know that obviously bringing in the big names is going to attract a lot of fans. But they've got grassroots down to a T, whereas we're kind of...
That's what, yeah, absolutely, and that's the future, you know, bringing in kind of 30-odd-year-olds. There've been some who have really made a huge impact, not least Beckham, who made a huge impact on the game in America, as they knew he would. And, you know, there have been kind of older players, the US who have, you know, who have made a difference. I mean, people like Robbie Keane may not have done the profile of the game, may not have had such a huge impact on that, but man, he was fantastic for LA Galaxy. And you know, you look around and there are, you know, there are people around the league, people from, oh, I don't know, you know, Giovinco up at Toronto, you know, Kaká down in Orlando. There's people that have kind of made a difference. It's all about developing their own.
Absolutely. You know, players making a difference. Schweinsteiger, look at him. I think Chicago Fire were the worst team for 2 years on the trot in MLS, and now they're top of the Eastern Conference or something. They've made a huge turnaround. But it's still a developing nation, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is a developing league. I mean, you go look, it's the biggest sporting nation on earth, and here's the world's greatest game. It's going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just that, unlike back in the day in the 70s with the Cosmos and the Whitecaps and clubs like Tampa Bay Rowdies and all of those, they wanted it to happen tomorrow and thought that it could happen tomorrow, that they would bring Pelé and Beckenbauer and, you know, these people, and that it would just overnight become a sensation, and it just didn't work like that. Whereas I think they learned that lesson, and the right sort of people got involved with the game, not least Ivan Gazidis, funny enough, he's now the chief exec at Arsenal. You know, he was involved right back at the start of MLS, worked in the office of the guy who worked on the 94 World Cup, you know, worked in the office of a guy called Alan Rothenberg, who kind of was absolutely key to driving the World Cup bid, but then also, more to the point, driving the creation of MLS. And, you know, you're now looking at kind of 20-odd years of history, and they're starting to... It's starting to... Whatever progress they make, the important thing is that they can sustain it. Whereas, when back in the day, with the NASL and previous incarnations of professional leagues, because they've been trying to do it for, you know, nearly 100 years. They've been trying to get professional league off the ground for nearly 100 years in America in different incarnations, but now that what they're doing is every bit of progress is actually underpinned, and it's a sustainable model, and you know, they've got properly run academies, they've got proper stadiums that have been built for football to be played in, you know, and they're building up a first, second and third generations of supporters whose lives revolve around their clubs like they do everywhere else in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, without going into too much into it, USL is absolutely fantastic. It's basically like a B league, isn't it?
And absolutely. It's, and some of the MLS teams do have B teams in, kind of functions a bit like a kind of reserve league. Yeah, I know, absolutely. And so it's up and running. It's just not going to... I think people expect things to happen overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the business model is that you just take time with it and don't kind of make massive commitments that 5-10 years down the line you can't sustain, and so the league folds like the NASL did.
That's right. Okay, well, you mentioned Mr. Gazidis, so let's talk about Arsenal a little bit, your beloved Arsenal. And how big do you think is the coming season for the club's immediate future?
I don't know, really. I mean, it's hard to say, isn't it? I don't know what... I mean, you'd say, oh, it's a big season, but then every season's a big season.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Every season is the biggest and most important season since the last biggest and most important season. And we just, you know, the whole thing is so kind of, it's not just Arsenal, but I think sort of top flight football generally in this country is so sort of driven by kind of hype and driven by money. You know, it's like the answer to every problem at that end of the Premier League. The answer to every problem is to spend £50 million. You know, and I just so I'm not sure really how big, you know, how big in what respect, how big in terms of the financial sustainability of the football club, how big in terms of you know, selling out the Emirates every other week, how big in terms of are they going to win the league for the first time in, you know, since moving from Highbury, but how big... I don't know. I don't even know what big would represent. Do you know what I mean?
It's, the thing is, Tom, to be fair, I mean, I've had this discussion with numerous Arsenal fans that I know, and I say to them, look, if you don't turn up, if you hand in your season ticket, there's always going to be someone that's going to take it off your hands. You know, it's the same at Man United, the same at Liverpool, same at Chelsea. Whoever hands in their season ticket at Tottenham, you give up your season ticket, someone is always going to take it. You're going to put asses in seats, let's put it that way. Arsenal are a big club, you know, they've got a massive fan base. I mean, you look at Twitter alone, I think they've got 6 or 7 million followers or something like that. It's a huge club. But when I ask a question like that to my friends at Arsenal fans, you know, is this a massive season for you guys? They immediately say yes, because in their eyes, it's, well, we're in the Europa League now. Manchester United won it last season. We should be winning it, you know, and that should get us into the Champions League. And that is the be-all, end-all, apparently. I don't know why. You know, a lot of them were very, how can I say, underwhelmed by winning the FA Cup, which I can't see why, because it's a fantastic competition.
Never mind a fantastic competition. And sometimes I wonder what people are watching, you know, because you've got, you know, you have to take things on face value. I'm not being funny, Scott. That was, you know, I had personal reasons for why it was a very special afternoon for me. You know, it was just a great dad and lad afternoon, and it was just brilliant. Don't get, you know, but I've got to say to you that I've been watching Arsenal 50 years, and that cup final, if you could just watch it without all the rubbish, all the kind of Wenger in, Wenger out, all this, you know, just, if you just watch it, just watch it. And to be fair, I think the people who were in the stadium that afternoon, there was a great, great atmosphere amongst the Arsenal supporters who just kind of put everything by for the afternoon, got behind the club and got behind the team. And it was a great atmosphere. It was a really, really great atmosphere in the Arsenal end at Wembley on cup final day. And, you know, that performance, that cup final was right up there. I've been to a lot of cup finals, let me tell you. I've seen us win a lot of leagues and win a lot of things. That was right up there as an afternoon. And just, you know, for all the things that people say, what football is and what Premier League football is and what top flight, you know, all of that. Let me just tell you one thing, so, is that if you want to know why people watch football, I'll tell you why people watch football. There were 5 minutes in that final. Victor Moses got sent off. Diego Costa equalised. And then Ramsey scored the winner. Those 5 minutes are why people watch football. I mean, that's why people go to football. That might not be why, you know, people kind of go online and kind of have a go at Wenger or have a go at this one or have a go at that one or whatever it is. But if you have grown up, if football means as much to you as it means to me, then it's worth remembering that those 5 minutes are why you watch football. Those were, to be an Arsenal supporter in those 5 minutes at Wembley, I know, don't get me wrong, I know Chelsea won the league, I know Man United won the Europa League, you know, I know, what I'm saying to you, those 5 minutes were better than anything any other football supporter in this country experienced last season. Okay? That was it. Those 5 minutes were the best. Because obviously it won us the tournament. Do you know what I mean? It won us the cup, as well as being in and of itself an amazing, the kind of 5 minutes that only football gives you. Victor Moses gets sent off. Great, we're 1-0 up. Brilliant, brilliant. We're home and hose. Let's just enjoy the next 20 minutes. Moments after that, Diego Costa equalises, and you think all of your history is coming back to haunt you. And then Giroud steps off the bench 2 minutes after that, and Ramsey scores the goal. in front of the Arsenal supporters. So it's worth remembering, whatever else is going on, that that went on. And, you know, it's like, for me, if I stop watching Arsenal, well then I stop watching football.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's my club.
Yeah.
I've been watching for 50 years. You know, I've been through, you know, I've been lucky. Because I've been through more good than bad with that club. A lot more good than bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just think, I don't get all this kind of, I really have trouble connecting with the kind of the gossip and the Wenger. You know, if another person asked me, Wenger in or Wenger out? What a stupid question. It's like, whose side are you on? Do you know what I mean? It's too important to me to kind of reduce it to that simple formula. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's your club. It's your club, so you see what's wrong and you also see what's right. So it's complicated, isn't it? It's complicated.
The thing is,
what
Tom,
people want is for it to be simple.
Yeah.
They want it to be Wenger in or Wenger out.
Yeah.
I just can't be. Because now, it's as if the clubs in the Premier League and, you know, Arsenal in particular in many ways, it's like people, you know, everybody's got an opinion. It's like the fortunes of Arsenal belong to everyone. Well, I kind of don't feel that way, to be perfectly honest. It's like, you know, it hasn't always been like that. And, you know, it felt like you were kind of, if you were an Arsenal supporter, you were a bit of a member of kind of weird club. Even if you were a football supporter, you know, you only have to go back 30 years and you had a government that wanted, you know, they'd sorted out the miners, they'd sorted out the journalists, or at least the National Union of Journalists, and the next people on the list were football supporters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And kind of history gets rewritten or forgotten about, or, do you know what I mean? You've got to remember, you know, you won't remember, but you will have read about Heysel, the Heysel
Stadium. Of course,
stadium.
Of course.
Okay, so yeah. Heysel's happened. I guarantee you, if you asked 100 football supporters what happened after that, 99 of them will say English clubs were kicked out of Europe, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 1 in 100 would tell you the truth, which is that Margaret Thatcher withdrew English clubs from Europe.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there was a time when football wasn't the national conversation like this. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But it was the hooliganism, wasn't it, that she blamed it for, and that's why, you know, all-seater stadiums were implemented, not because of crowd safety, is because she thought that it would counter hooliganism.
Yeah, that was the Hillsborough disaster, absolutely. But I'm talking about the Heysel disaster, which a couple of absolutely. And I just, you know, it has changed. It's all changed. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, oh, we've got to go back to how it was. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm just saying I have a bit of trouble connecting with a lot of it. And it's funny, I sort of, because I live a bit out in the sticks here, I kind of watch a lot of League Two football as well, particularly at a club near here, Cheltenham Town. And I go, and it's funny, because you could have a million conversations a day still about Arsenal, and everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They go, oh, Wenger in, Wenger out. And I just can't, I'm just bored of that conversation. The interesting thing is, like Cheltenham Town, who average about 3,000, 3,500 for home games, if I have a chat with anybody about them, it's really interesting, because they actually go. Do you know what I mean? The only people who want to talk about Cheltenham Town are Cheltenham Town supporters. Do you know what I mean? It's when it used to be like that, and this isn't just an Arsenal thing, this is everywhere. This is supporters, you know, Man United supporters would tell you the same, Liverpool, Chelsea, Tottenham, you know, that everybody's kind of got an opinion about their club, and you go, hang on, no, this is my club. But yeah, so, sorry, I've gone off on someone.
No, it's fine. Listen, it's totally understandable. You know, you see a certain YouTube channel stoking up the fire kind of thing, and that's their prerogative. They can do whatever they want, you know.
Absolutely, and I'm not saying we've got to go back to how it was. All I'm saying is I still have, you know, you grow up with a thing and you kind of, you keep that, I can't quite move on myself. I'm not saying stop, I'm just saying I'm struggling to move on. Yeah. With the times, if you get what I mean.
Put it this way, Tom, you know, you've been an Arsenal fan, as you said, for 50 odd years, so you know, you know that the club moves on. You know, Don Howell, Steve Burtonshaw, George Graham, Stuart Houston, Bruce Rioch. I mean, these are names that a lot of modern day Arsenal fans wouldn't even bother looking up on Wikipedia, would they?
No, absolutely no. And it's that, you know, that's like I say, that is. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't want you to think I'm going, oh well, you know, I'm right and the modern game is wrong. I'm not saying things move on. It's just I struggle a bit to connect with it. Do you know what I mean? And I struggle a bit to connect with the whole conversation about Arsenal. Mm. I'm sort of happy of talking about, I don't know, I'm happy of talking about Cheltenham or Barnet or Millwall or the other clubs I go and watch. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Arsenal conversation is so big. The Premier League conversation is so big. I struggle to kind of get connected with it, really.
Fair enough. Okay, I'll tell you what, let me wrap it up with a couple of questions Arsenal related again. Let's talk about Lacazette. He's an exciting signing, isn't he? But the future of Alexis Sanchez continues to dominate Arsenal's transfer news. Do you think Arsenal should cut their losses and sell him now before he can leave for nothing, or is it time to smash the wage structure and just offer him the world to keep him?
I think if he doesn't want to stay, then don't get me wrong, he's fantastic. He's been fantastic to watch. But look, if I'm kind of, if they want to go, then go. Do you know what I mean? If the only reason that you'd be staying is because you're going to earn, you know, twice or three times or four times as much money as you are now, if that's the point of the thing, well, go. I don't think it'd be good to sell him to a Chelsea or a Manchester City or, because I think that, not because I'm particularly worried about kind of coming back to haunt or, you know, but I do think there's a, you know, it's a bad message. I don't mean a bad message just about Arsenal, although it is that, but actually a bad message about football, which is if you want something, you just go and buy it. Do you know what I mean? I think there is a, you know, there's an enormous amount of people around football who know the price of everything and the value of nothing, and I just wouldn't want to kind of cater to that really by selling into. But who knows? I mean, who knows? You know, if a right back is worth 50 million, any right back is worth 50 million, how much must someone like Sanchez be worth?
See,
and to be fair, you want to see people put up as well. Put up or shut up.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing? Have they received an offer? I doubt it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's just talk, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's just talk. So you see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, to be honest, for me, I'm not, this is what I'm saying, I struggle to kind of go, oh, I've got to have Alexis Sanchez, I've got to have Alexis. Don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic, fantastic player and you would like him to be playing for Arsenal. But not, I don't want him to be playing for Arsenal so much that, yeah, the idea of him wanting to play elsewhere doesn't make me go, well, off you go then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's fine.
Teams move on, you know, though, Tom, don't they?
Danny Welbeck will play right left. Fine.
Yeah.
I love that guy. So,
there you go.
See what happens.
Absolutely.
See what happens.
And you mentioned price tags, and obviously the TV money has played a massive part in it. What's your take on it? Because I seem to remember when the Premier League was implemented, you know, everyone was saying, oh, there's a lot of money in the game and they're ruining it. And then Roy Keane made a British transfer record from Nottingham Forest to Manchester United for £3.75 million. And everyone's saying the world's gone mad. And here we are talking about...
WWE was, by the way.
Exactly. And here we are talking about a £50 million right back. I mean, let's be 100% honest. Money has always changed the game in some way, shape or form, hasn't it? It's not...
Of course it has. It really has, you know, in a sense that, you know, and look, on the one hand, you would have to say, if there's money washing around the game, who deserves it more than the people we pay to watch them play? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Who deserves it more than the players, really? That's who we pay to play. We don't pay to watch chief executives create balance sheets. You know, the players should be rewarded if that's what's going on. You can go back to the... It does kind of change. It does change the nature of the beast, though. You know, the money does change the nature of the beast. You know, in the early 60s, time was that there was a kind of maximum limit on wages.
Yeah.
You know, no player could earn more than £100 a week unless they were getting it in a... brown envelope in the dressing room. Yeah. But basically, no player could... So you can imagine how easy that made it for football clubs to run their business, and also how easy it made it for football clubs to kind of make money. Do you know what I mean? Because you knew at the start of every season, you knew exactly what your outgoings were, and they were low. You know, if the maximum you were paying anybody was £100 a week, then... That went, the maximum wage went, and it changed football. In some ways it changed it for the better, in that you had, you know, the best players were suddenly being rewarded for being the best players, so that, you know, the Johnny Haynes of this world were suddenly kind of, you know, Bobby Moore and people like that were suddenly able to actually command their worth in the market, and you went, great. But of course, what you saw was, what followed was 10 years of defensive football, because suddenly people didn't want to win, they got terrified of losing. And I think that, you know, the money in the English League has changed the nature of the English League, and it's become, obviously, the Premier League is now, you know, I'm not the first person to say it, it's now an international league being played in this country. So, because the market now is bring people in from all over the world, and the reason they come here, for all that people say, oh yeah, well, it's because it's, you know, the English League is such a great league and want to play, you know, come here because we pay them more than anybody else does. That's the reason they come here.
That's right.
You know, barring Barcelona and Real Madrid and, you know, one or two others, Paris Saint-Germain, you know, by and large, there's only one reason. They come here to play because we pay so much money. So, it does change it, but at the same time, you go, well, fair enough, because we're watching. I just feel, you know, with the, it does stick with me a bit that, you know, all of this money coming into the game from the new TV deal, and it has just gone straight out the door again.
Mm, that's right.
You know what I mean? There's no, you know, I know there's the kind of, now there's the £30 maximum for away tickets in the Premier League and stuff. That's a gesture. Do you know what I mean? For me, it's like every club is trying to keep up with the next one, so nobody's got the nerve to go, actually, do you know, some of this money, we're not going to spend it on players. We're not going to spend it on players' agents. Do you know what we're going to do? We're going to actually make it cheaper for people to come and watch football. But that's just kind of wishful thinking, probably, but it's... I do feel like there could be more done for the game with that kind of money than just paying people more than they can spend in 20 lifetimes.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, the 20 is plenty campaign was fantastic, but let's be honest, that's got a shelf life, hasn't it? And then you're looking at the facilities in and around the area. I mean, I live in North London, and yeah, we're lucky that we've got places like, you know, New River Sports Centre and whatnot. But then when you look at, you know, playing fields, it's not the same as what it used to be. Okay, fair enough, they weren't maintained as well as they should be these days, or you see elsewhere. But, you know, we don't have that many 3G pitches. We haven't got 4G pitches. Places aren't looked after properly. That makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's true. Are you going to regret having me on here, mate? Because I just sound like an old geezer. and I'm really not, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, oh, it was all right before and now it's rubbish, because I really don't feel that. You know, what change happens, and you just kind of, you get on with it. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. It's just that obviously you do think back to what you've experienced in the past, and that you can't help but have that inform how you react to the present day now.
But this goes back to your discussion in your book when you interviewed all of those footballers and how when they were younger, what they remember playing football. I mean, people like Benny McCarthy and Messi, I presume they'll be kicking a... Well, not even a football. They probably made a football out of paper or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, funny you mentioned those two, because obviously, like Messi was just always. You know, his story really is about being the little kid surrounded by big kids.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? That's absolutely, and having more talent. You know, he's just an outstanding player. Would play this. Grown up to when he was 3.5 foot tall and just tear the place up, but just constantly playing and loving to play and stuff. And I think, you know, he grew up in a city called Rosario, and it was cool. He could play around there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Benny McCarthy, on the other hand, has grown up in Hanover Park. I mean, I don't know if you know about Hanover Park, but that is proper tough down there. That it's a township just out from the centre of Cape Town. And for Benny and it was football was a kind of way out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Football has been a really, really important part of life in that, you know, what is otherwise a place that's got such enormous problems. I mean, real kind of social, economic problems, terrible problems with kind of gun violence, with drug abuse, you know, just kids killing themselves for nothing. You know what I mean? It's just, but Benny came out of that. And funny enough, when I went back to South Africa to do the book about the World Cup, I went to Hanover Park, and there's a guy, you know, they've got their own club in Hanover Park, which is just this kind of beacon for just one positive thing in lives that are just so difficult and so dangerous and so damaged. And you know, it's you want to know about the power of football, that's the power of football. I mean, they're called Hanover Park FC, and you know, Benny, you know all about them, because he's gone back now to, he's managing back in the South African league. But you're absolutely right, they're playing in the street, they're playing in fields, they're playing in, you know, wherever they can kick a ball. And the great thing is, with those players, with those, you know, those players like, you know, Messi is just a kind of perfect example of it, really, that someone who, everything that has happened to him and he's been through, him, but he would still, if you just said at any moment of the day or night, what do you want to do, he'd just go, let's play football.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And a number of them who just go back, gee, a lot of the lads, you know, the African players, and, you know, they get a holiday, what do? They go home and play football with their mates. That's a holiday. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
It's great. It's just a great thing.
Fantastic. Well, Tom, thank you ever so much for your time. Really, really appreciate having you on. It's been great talking to you, and I really hope you can come back on the show at some point soon.
Yeah, well, you know where I am, mate.
Absolutely fantastic. Tom, have you got a social media account or anything like that? People
can follow? It's bad, isn't it? It's bad. I struggle.
You stay well clear of it, because you don't want to get involved.
No, that's what I'm saying. Because, you know, when you took this, what I'm saying, like, I've been rabbiting on here, and you listen, and I'm listening to myself and thinking, oh, he's saying everything's bad these days. And it's not, I can't engage, you know, social media doesn't really kind of work for me. That's not to say, oh, it's a bad thing. They just don't work for me. You know what I mean?
It's not your thing. It's not a problem. Not a problem. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Tom.
And, no, good to talk to you. And by all means, get in touch again.
thank you very much for coming on the show, man. That, you know, like I said, that hopefully I'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, pleasure.
Great stuff, Tom. You have a good evening, mate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, up the arsehole.
Cheers, mate. All the best.